Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right. Okay. All right. Clear my throat here. All right. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. It's raining here, folks. It's raining. It's windy. The wind is blowing. I'm sitting near the window, hoping it does not blow in. But it's pretty bad out here. It's been gray and cold and stuff like that. And you know, but how not, if I can say it, we have not had any snow yet, so far yet. And I hope your 2017 has been pretty decent so far. All righty, we have been, I said yesterday that when I came on the show today that I would have brief parts, bits and pieces of Barack Obama's speech, and not if not his entire speech in its entirety, how we may have it tomorrow for some reasons, because the computers here are slow. They are super slow. I mean, they are so slow. I can get up and go over here and bake a cake and come back. And, you know, that's how slow it is. So we're just going to try and go on with the show, even though it's raining and storming here. That could have something to do with it. And there might be, if you're calling in or if you're your guest or something, you have a delay, you know. And so it may be because of we're having bad weather in Chicago today. Tonight, actually. But anyway, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. And I hope a lot of you listened to Obama's speech last night. It was riveting. It was vintage Obama, okay? And it was great. I liked it. I always like his speeches. It's just that they sound good. They sound great. People motivated and revved all up, but that's about it. And I was revved all up, you know. And that was his final speech last night, and it was a good one, as always. And I'm looking at him right now on one of the monitors here from the speeches from last night. The volume is down. But, you know, it was a great speech. It was a wonderful speech. It was something that, you know, I mean, once he leaves office, he's going to make a lot of money, a ton of money going around town and speaking at a lot of these functions and colleges and universities. He's going to make a lot of money doing that. So, you know, he doesn't have to worry about anything in terms of his financial stability, because he and his family, they're going to be great as they already are. They're rich already. Anyway, he says some things and that I did agree with. Like, if you don't like the current situation, if you don't like the current politicians out there, you don't like what they're doing, get yourself a clipboard, go get you some signatures and run for office. Now, that was a great thing to say. You know, he's saying, don't sit back, argue and get mad, get pissed off, get angry. Do something about it. And that's what I've been saying on this show for 2.5 years now. Do something. If you don't like it, get out there and do something. Nothing's going to come to you. Nothing's going to work the way you want it to work unless you work to change it. And I've been talking about the man in the mirror for so long. If you want to change the way of the world, look at yourself. You know, and I totally agree with him. You know, if you want to make a change, you don't like what's going on in the world, you do something about it. You run for office. You become a public servant and do what you think ought to be done the right way. Because we got a lot of these folks. There's no doubt about it. We got a lot of corrupt politicians and asshole politicians, stupid, crazy, lunatic politicians. Donald Trump's going around calling everybody that do not support him crazy, lazy, and stupid. If you did not support Donald Trump, if you did not vote for him, if you don't like some of the things he says or does, then he's coming back at you with insults. I mean, that goes for every person that didn't vote for him. He's coming back at you with insults. And that's vintage Donald Trump. That's Donald Trump in a nutshell. That's Donald Trump being Donald Trump, you know. And I'm looking at him right now on Huffington Post, and he's got one of those vicious looking faces because he gave a press conference this morning. And I guess everybody who's anybody around the country is giving their critique or their opinions on what the press conference was about and how he handled it. You know, and I have mine. I have my own take on the press conference. I think it was one of the worst press conferences by a presidential candidate in the history of the United States. That's my thought. You may have a different thought. Okay, 347-857-1762. That's one of the things about America. We can say what we want to say. You can disagree. But we don't have to hate each other because we disagree with each other. We don't have to do that. But a lot of that is going on. And but I don't see no sense in that. I don't think Donald Trump is fit to be president. You may think he's fit to be president, which is fine. I mean, if you think that way, that's great. If you disagree with me, that I don't like some of the things that you hear on this show, or you disagree with a lot of things that I say, fine, great. Debate it. Talk about it. You know, don't. You know, call me a bunch of names and, you know, it's just the American way to disagree. We disagree to disagree. We agree. Put that the wrong way. We agree to disagree. Yeah, that's the way it's supposed to go, folks. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Like I said before, we've been having some computer problems, mainly because of the weather. I'm thinking it's the weather because I haven't had these problems in a long, long time. And they're minor problems. It slows the computer down somewhat. You know, when you click on it, it takes a time to change a page. And I'm thinking that's due to some of the weather out here. We are having some vicious weather here. And, you know, so if anything happens, there's a delay or there's a crack or there's a whatever, it's probably due to the weather. Because right now it's 41 degrees, I believe, in the city of Chicago. It's 6:09 straight up p.m. in Chicago. And but it's beautiful. It's great. It's wonderful. I mean, it's winter. It feels like fall, though. It feels like fall weather instead of winter. But a few days ago, it felt like winter, folks. It felt cold. I mean, we were freezing our asses off. But it's pretty nice now. It's just cloudy and raining and wind blowing. And but we're still alive and we appreciate it. All right. My guest today is author Jim Cosby. Where did I hear that name before? Cosby. Oh, we'll figure it out. Anyway, I hope everybody had a great super Christmas. I mean, it's a few weeks after, but still in all, it's early into the new year, and I hope everybody has had an awesome new year. I really do. I truly do, and it's been great. So we are well into January 2017, so I guess we have to think about going forward. Yeah. And going forward means that Obama is out and Donald Trump is in. As I've said yesterday, none of us should be wishing Trump to fail. We don't want that. I don't want that, even though I didn't vote for him, even though I don't think he's fit for president, but he is the president and we do not want him to fail. We want him to be successful. Has I seen any progress in him being successful as president? No, I haven't. At least not at this point, not at this juncture. In other words, he hasn't actually taken over as president yet. It's going to be a week from this Friday, January 20th. And I'm hearing that there's not going to be many people at his inauguration. At least not as many people that was at Obama's final speech at McCormick Place here in Chicago last night, which I thought it was a great speech. A lot of people are giving it a high five. I'm giving it a high five. And I've been critical of Obama on this show for a long time. And I'm still critical. I don't doubt his speaking skills, his oratory. I don't doubt that. I think he has a great commanding in speech. I think he can move people. He can. He just couldn't move them enough to vote to get Hillary into office. And he couldn't move them enough to when he was here 2 years ago campaigning for Democratic Governor Paul Pat Quinn when he was running. Because now we have Republican Governor Bruce Rauner, who is not the type of governor I think should not be the type of politician in the state of Illinois. That's my opinion. I give my opinion, and you have yours. They have theirs. And this is the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me all over the place. I mean, when you're a writer and you're a musician and you're a radio host, you have to let people know these things because there's a ton of people who do the same thing out there. I remember asking a person, I don't know if it was a guest or maybe it was someone on Facebook, another writer actually, how do you make your book stand out from the crowd? There are a zillion books published every year. And if you are a writer, if you are an author, how do you make your book stand out from the crowd? And I was amazed at some of the answers to that question. Some writers and authors, they didn't know. Some of them was baffled. Some of them I can feel some of them scratching their heads at that question. As if, you know, because I'm an author myself, so I asked this question, how would you make your book stand out from all those others that are published every year? Some people didn't know. A lot of them did not know. And this is new to me, folks. I mean, I'm thinking if you're a writer, you know how to make your book stand out from the crowd. Because I try my best to make my book stand out from the crowd without spending much money or any money, you know, and I think I'm doing a great job at it. I'm not doing it as well as I could because I got so many other things I'm doing And I'm doing all of this myself because I don't want to hire people to do these things when I can do them. I just have to find the time to do them. But it was just amazing to me to find out that people don't know how to, people refusing to get their book out there, or people just don't know how to get their book out there. Wow, I didn't know that. I you know, you learn something every day, but then sometimes you learn things that you thought you knew, or I don't know. People are people, and I would like to talk to a lot of those people and try to tell them how. I wanted to tell them how to do it, you know, how to get your book out there, how to get somebody reading it. Because if you don't tell anybody about your book, it's going to die on Amazon. It's going to die on Barnes & Noble, Books A Zillion, wherever you have it. People aren't just going to randomly stop by your site and buy your book. They got to know something about it. And it's up to you to make them care about your book. Because I've said this 1,000 times. Nobody cares that you're a writer. Nobody cares that you have a book out there. You as an author, you as a writer, if you want your message to get out, you have to do it yourself. You don't do it, it does not get out. You know, if you don't get your book out there, then that reader is going to go somewhere else to find something else to read. And it just shocked me, and it was amazed me that so many people, so many authors, they did not know how to get their books out there in front of the public instead of just having it up on Amazon. And I know some writers today that they have written extensively. They have mountains and mountains of stuff, but yet they are not, there's no publicity. They're not talking about it. They're not trying to get it out there in front of the people so it their stuff can be read. It can be bought, purchased, downloaded. They're not doing anything. The only thing they're doing is working on the next book, you know. So we're going to talk about that. I don't know if we're going to do that in this segment of the show, but that has to be talked about. And, you know, because you got a lot of people out here publishing books, don't know what the hell they're doing. They just know that they love writing, even though they're not even benefiting from it financially. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I know a lot of you people out there heard Trump this morning. He gave a press conference. Like I just said, it was one of the worst press conferences I've ever heard given by a presidential candidate. He attacked the CNN reporter. I mean, he, instead of Trump talking about issues and policies, he's always talking about Russia. Russia this, Russia that. He's trying to defend himself on Russia and Russia, Russia. Yeah, those things have to be answered, because I do believe that Russia has hacked the American election. I believe Trump and Vladimir Putin, I think they are chummy buddies. I think Russia played a part in getting him elected. That's why Trump is so hot under the collar about it. He's come out and kind of admitted that Russia tampered with the election, because he was getting so much criticism for not believing a lot of the four or five intelligence agencies that have proof that this is going on. And now they're saying that Russia has so much information on Donald Trump that they may be blackmailing him. Trump said, no, that's not true. That's not true. That's not true. I mean, you guys, that's fake news, fake news. You know, so, you know, I think this Russia thing is going to haunt Trump for the rest of his presidency, maybe his life. You know, I don't think this is going to die down any, because I don't think Trump is going to let it die down. America is not going to let it die down. I think they're giving hearings on this thing. Okay. There's being confirmations on some of his cabinet picks, you know, going on as I speak. But this Russia thing with Donald Trump, it's going to haunt him for the, if he's allowed to do 4 years as president. I think a lot of the Republicans don't want, in my opinion, I think a lot of the Republicans don't want Donald Trump as president. I think they want to impeach him, a final way of getting rid of him, and then appointing his running mate, Mike Pence, as president of the United States, because they think that Mike Pence is more presidential and more sensible and not as thin-skinned as Donald Trump. You know, I mean, Donald Trump is Donald Trump. Donald Trump is going to be Donald Trump. He's always, and we are, and a lot of us feel that we're in big trouble with Donald Trump. I mean, this guy, I don't know. Anyway, you've been listening to George Wilder Jr. Show. I don't want to spend the whole show on Donald Trump, but, you know, I mean, this guy's going to be president of the United States, and he's going to be one of the most powerful men in the world. And I think we have to say something about him. I mean, this press conference proved once again that he, you know, he just, I mean, he has a hot head. I mean, he has a temper. I mean, he acts like King Trump instead of President of the United States. He's a king. He's a king, almighty king. And the rest of us are just peasants. And, you know, I just don't think that's the way to go. But anyway, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. And we will be, let's see, can we do this? We will be right back, folks. Thanks for tuning in. Okay. All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show, 347-585-7162. One of the things I would like to say to everybody out there, be kind to one another. Be nice to one another, okay? We have to be kind, be nice. And some people are probably laughing at that, but that's possible. Be kind to one another. Stop fighting. Stop arguing. Stop hating. Stop shooting. Put the guns down. Treat each other with respect. Treat each other with some kind of respect. Find your happiness. Find your happy place and be free. Let there be more people helping people, because the world is just, it's just too messed up, and it's getting worse by the day. And we are here to say, be kind to one another. And that's one of the ways of helping to make the world a better place. And that's all it's about. It's up to you. this radio show gets all over the world. And it's up to you. Be kind to one another. Be nice. Be understanding. Compromise. If you see someone in need of help, legitimately in need of help, help out. That's the way you do that. All right, you've been listening to George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. I have a new book out called Under the Moonlight. You guys go to Amazon and check that out. I had fun writing it. It was from a script that I written years ago. I finally gotten off some other stuff and focused on that. It's a love story. I think it's a love story. I think it's a very, very nice story. So you guys go check that out. And I can hear some people saying, wow, he wrote a love story. He's not shooting nobody. He wrote a love story. Yeah, I try to be diverse. When I write something, I try to be diverse. I try to write in every genre there is that I can. Okay. And check that out. It's called Under the Moonlight. Okay, let's see what we got here. Okay, like I said before, I thought that the Obama's farewell speech that he gave in Chicago at McCormick Place was one of the best speeches I've ever heard in a long time. And I was trying to compare that, or maybe even contrast that to what Trump and his press conference was all about. And there's no comparison, folks. If you listen to Obama's speech and then you turn around and listen to Donald Trump's press conferences, his first press conference, pardon me, and you try to compare them, there's no comparison. There's no contrasting. You know, he was swamped by Obama. And Obama had 14,000 to 20,000 people at his farewell speech. 14,000 to 20,000 people he had there, standing room. I mean, it was crowded, folks. Even people on that, there was people probably outside of McCormick Place who couldn't get in, but they can still hear the speech because there were speakers and stuff placed on the outside of the building. So the people who couldn't get in, they can still hear their speech. That's what I'm trying to say. So Donald Trump is not a speaker. He's not a public speaker. He's not any kind of a speaker. I mean, Donald Trump is too used to people kissing his ass. He's too used to be treated like he's the king. And I've heard a lot of people say, well, Donald Trump is all about Donald Trump. Donald Trump is for Donald Trump. It's all about him. And I've heard people say, wow, I can't wait to hear his first State of the Union address. Yeah, it's going to be all about him. And so far, they may be correct, because when you listen to Donald Trump talk or speak, no matter how it comes out of his mouth, it's basically about him, not America. It's about him, you know, him and maybe his family, but it's not about Americans. And like I said, if you didn't vote for Donald Trump, and if you're critical of Donald Trump, he calls you stupid, he calls you dumb, and he calls you ignorant. He calls, you know, if you didn't, I didn't vote for him, so he's calling me stupid and dumb. That's okay, because sometimes I may even call him that. You know, but as I've said, I don't want Donald Trump to fail as president. I want him to be the best president that he can be. Because if he fails at being president, that totally means that America fails. And we don't want America to fail. We want America to be the best place that it can be. And we the people are going to have to work at that. We are
the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
All right, you've been listening to the talk of our times right here at the George Wilder Jr. Show. And it's fun, people. Let's do this right quick.
I'm Keith Olbermann, and this is The Resistance. We have elected an idiot For all the insanity and the stunning self-absorption and the bullying and the delusional view of America that would embarrass a high school dropout watching cartoons while strung out on meth. The much more existential threat from the Swiss cheese personality of Donald John Trump roared to the forefront over this weekend past. And that existential threat is simply this. In the complex international relations that, like it or not, keep the world from blowing itself up every afternoon, Trump has just proved he has no earthly clue what the fuck he is doing.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr.
All right, no profanity. This is a family show, all right? All right, let's go to the phones, ladies and gentlemen. All right, welcome. You're on the George Wilder Jr. show.
Hey, George, this is Jim Cosby, author.
All right, thanks for coming. Thanks for calling into the show. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, author Jim Cosby is on the show. Go right ahead. Give us a bio and tell us about your work.
Yes, sir. So I'm Jim Cosby, James A. Cosby, and I live in Philadelphia. I'm an attorney by trade. And a few years ago, as a lifelong fan of rock and roll, I started with, had a few questions in my mind about where rock music even came from, right? And so, you know, I started to realize, like, I didn't really know much about where rock and roll even came from. Like, what was the first rock record? You know, where did it really come from? All I knew was there was a black guys playing the blues, and then at some point Elvis came around, and that's all I knew. So I started doing a lot of research, and I just found some amazing answers.
Yeah, I always was told that rock and roll came from blues. You know, it's just it was just a sped up form of blues. You know, and that's my research on it, that it was a sped up form of blues, and you know, and blues came from I believe evolved from jazz or something, and it just kind of kept going on as something like that.
Right. Well, that's definitely all part of the stories. I mean, when I started off, when I thought I was going to write a book, I thought, well, I'll probably go back to the 40s, I guess, and then go from there. But I mean, you can trace the blues back to slave work songs and
oh yeah,
black
yeah,
spirituals.
No doubt about it. Yeah, right. Yeah, no doubt about that.
And then
yeah, no doubt about that.
And then in the 40s, you know, the blues is definitely the foundation of rock. It's like the heart and soul of it. But you know, the blues kind of added all these other elements too, like jazz gave it the swing, you know, this pulsing rhythm, and gospel gave it this high energy, and then these different components just keep kind of combining, and then it, you know, and then at some point it's rock and roll, and then it's rock and roll, and then you add hillbilly music a couple years later, and then it's still, you know, so you already have rock and roll, then the hillbilly sound, you know, through Elvis and Carl Perkins and people like that, and even Chuck Berry. Yeah. Chuck Berry brought in the hillbilly sound, you know.
Yeah. I remember Chuck Berry. We thought he was weird at first. We said, a black guy singing hillbilly, you know, but it worked for him. Do you think rock and roll is dead?
Oh, man. You know, I mean, I think rock and roll, as far as like what we think of classic rock, I think mm-hmm. it really has run its course. I will, you know, sometimes, you know, people have asked that over the years, and I think it might finally be true that it might, you know, rock as we know it. But I got to say, like, there's a lot of splinters of indie rock bands out there. There's still like a lot of really good rock music. You just don't have like those big bands that are, you know, that everybody listens to anymore.
Yeah. In some cases, I think it's sad because I think if jazz is not dead, it's dying.
Right.
Yeah, and that's sad. Even though there's people who still listen to blues and jazz and rock and roll, but you're not going to hear it on the radio or anything like that. You're not going to go out to a concert and someone's going to be playing it, you know. So it makes me sad to know that that kind of music is gone. I mean, not totally gone, not literally gone, but at least it's not being done today. And I think some of the greatest music comes from the past, not what's going on now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, every genre or subgenre, you know, it always pretty much gets played out. You know, it's like you can only do so much, you know, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So what's the name of your book? Can you give us that name again?
Yes, it's Devil's Music, Holy Rollers, and Hillbillies, How America Gave Birth to Rock and Roll.
That's a great title, man. That's an eye catcher. That's a wonderful. Can you read an excerpt for us?
Sure.
A little. Okay.
Yeah, I'll just jump and I'll give you a little background first. It's just a short paragraph. It's a paragraph,
okay.
I guess.
All right.
So one, you know, part like I was saying, you know, I was amazed at how, like, I just kept running into these stories, and I was just amazed at these colorful people and these amazing stories and people I'd never heard of, you know. And so one of the things that I just thought was fascinating is the Pentecostal church. Okay.
Yeah.
And for me growing up, I didn't know, I mean, I barely knew something about the Pentecostal church. People spoke in tongues and rolled around on the floor in you know, slain in the spirit.
You know, I don't know,
most people,
that.
I guess, are familiar with it. Yeah. And so anyway, at one point I was reading it and in my research, and I saw, okay, so Elvis Presley was raised Pentecostal. And I thought, wow, that's really strange, you know. And then I read, and Jerry Lee Lewis was raised Pentecostal, and Little Richard was raised Pentecostal.
Yeah.
And I just thought that's amazing. Like, those are three of the, you know, this first wave of rock giants. These guys are like, those are three of the really the wildest, you know.
I mean, a lot of those early rock musicians started off in the church. Yeah. And they took that sound, you know, and made it rock and roll. And I'm just so sad that it's gone. I wish people were still playing it. But now, what do you think about music today?
You know, it's funny. I don't keep up on it. Like, I just find music I like, and I'm not, you know, so I'm not so up to date on everything. I listen to some stuff it's almost like dream pop. It's like indie guitar, indie rock with a lot of guitar, but it's really melodic.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a group called Wild Nothing as an example.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was saying. Like, there's some great music out there. I mean, he's got, you know, some of these guys are just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just, so I'm not really keeping up on, you know, I don't really know much about Taylor Swift and, you know, and a lot of other people.
You know what? I don't keep up on it either, man. I'm with you. I don't keep up with it because I'm not a fan of it. I'm gonna put it straight to you. I'm not a fan of today's music. I am an old school guy. Give me a rock and roll. Give me some blues, some jazz back in the day, because I feel that's the best music there is. These people nowadays cannot touch that. You know, I mean, I don't think you have to. I mean, if you watch some of this stuff called The Voice, a lot of these shows on television, and I don't either, but I have kids, they watch it. So sometimes I'll, you know, walk by and they're watching this crap, you know, and there's no substance in it. It's all about your voice, it's all about singing, the quality of your voice. It's not about the music, the musicians anymore. I mean, if you see somebody on stage, they're singing, but you don't see the band. Where's the band? Where are the guitars, the drums? You know, you see this person standing on stage all alone with a microphone. You know, today's music just doesn't do nothing for me. It really does. Miley Cyrus, Taylor Swift. I mean, I don't think you have to get on stage and get undressed, take off your clothes. A lot of that's going on. I think that's crazy. You know, so... I'm still the old school. I mean, I'm still living in the days of Motown. You can call me old fashioned. I don't care.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I like jazz and even give me a little bit of Led Zeppelin, Rolling Stones, or you know, Eric Clapton. I'm still in that kind of a genre. you know. Right. And I do love jazz. And, you know, I'm just not with today's music. I mean, I'm just not, you know.
Yeah.
Are you a musician?
I hear you. I'm not, no. No, just a fan.
Okay.
Just a long fan.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I play a little bit. I've been in a band before, and we used to do a lot of cover songs and stuff like that. And we broke up a long time ago. All right. Author Jim Crosby on the George Cosby. You know, when I think about Cosby, I think about this other guy. I guess you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Did you read that excerpt already, or did I interrupt you?
No, I have it. Yeah, I still have it right here.
Okay.
I'll read this. I was giving you like kind of a long context. I just wanted to read this about Pentecostalism. And
okay.
And this connection, this crazy connection between Pentecostalism and rock.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the Holy Rollers in the title. That's the Holy Rollers is sort of this derogatory nickname of the Pentecostal parishioners.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's just a paragraph. Both rock and Pentecostalism offered responses to restrictive traditional practices. Pentecostalism was seen as an antidote to rigid, text-driven fundamentalist practices, while rock was bucking an oppressive life as a square stuck in a rat race. Writing of Pentecostalism, Harvey Cox described the experience of the Holy Spirit as, or the charismatic experience as, quote, so total it shatters the cognitive packaging, unquote. So total it shatters the cognitive packaging. I'll just read it again. As one rock musician similarly described rock and roll's initial explosion in popularity, it was a, quote, global psychic jailbreak, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Like rock music, Pentecostalism tapped into something, a Holy Spirit or human spirit. Whatever it is, it runs deep. Together, this rock-Pentecostal connection and the parallels between these two phenomena really speak to the sacred-secular tensions that run through America's history, and they're examined later in the book.
Oh, okay. Sounds great, man. It sounds good. It's a very interesting book. How is it doing so far?
It's good. It's been out for a few months, so you know, I think I'm just starting to get a little attention. I've got some good reviews.
Oh, okay,
so,
great.
Right.
Okay. Where can we find it? If we wanted to go buy it or pick it up or read a sample, where can we go do that at?
Amazon. You can read the samples on Amazon. And it's if you look up Devil's Music, Holy Rollers,
mm-hmm.
and Hillbillies, if you mm-hmm. just try to remember Devil's Music, Holy Rollers, and it's pretty easy to find.
How long did it take you
Amazon.
To write? Okay.
It took several years.
Okay.
The whole process was pretty long, but I'm already into a second book. So I've spent time on both books already, but this took like probably 3 years, maybe.
Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. So we can find it on Amazon.com.
Yep.
If we put your name, Jim Cosby, up there, Cosby, we can probably find that book. Okay. You have a website?
Yeah, or James Cosby. Yeah.
Okay, James. Okay.
Yeah. And if you look for it on Facebook, you can find me, or there's a Facebook page just for the book under Devil's Music, Holy Rollers, and Hillbillies.
All right, James
Devil's
Cosby.
Music,
okay, Devil Music, Holy Rollers. Sound great. James Cosby on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thanks a lot for being on the show.
Thanks a lot, George. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. All right, James Cosby, Holy Rollers. Check that out on Facebook and on Amazon. All right, we're going to be right back, folks. Stay with me. The George Wilder Jr. Show is on the air.
I'm Keith Olbermann, and this is The Resistance. He said, quote, "You'll find out on Tuesday or Wednesday." He said he knows a lot about hacking. He said he knows about the hacking of the Democratic National Committee and other computer systems, quote, "things that other people don't know." "What do you know," he was asked Saturday night, "that other people don't know?" "You'll find out," he said confidently, "on Tuesday or Wednesday." But Tuesday night, he tweeted that the intelligence briefing on Russian hacking, he put insult quotes around intelligence and Russian hacking, had been delayed until Friday, positing perhaps more time needed to build a case. Very strange. Later Tuesday night, CNN reported there had been no hacking review scheduled that day for Trump by the CIA director nor the director of national intelligence. NBC reported there was one, but it had always been scheduled for Friday. Independent reporter Mark Ambinder reported there was a scheduled briefing that was delayed from last week because of the family emergency of one of the intelligence officials, that the White House would get that briefing Wednesday, congressional leaders Thursday, and Trump Friday, and it was identical to what Trump would have heard last week. Trump has said nothing except to again attack other Americans and to again pretend he knows everything, and Wednesday morning to, incredibly, to take sides with Julian Assange, who is an enemy to this country and an enemy to democracy everywhere, and at best a de facto Russian agent. Julian Assange said a 14-year-old could have hacked Podesta. Why was DNC so careless? Also said Russians did not give him the info. And quoting Fox News, Julian Assange on U.S. media coverage, "it's very dishonest, more dishonest than anyone knows." The dishonesty here is all Donald Trump's, with Assange, for whom Trump wanted the death penalty in 2010 and the Cretan Hannity as his fellow travelers. We, the American people, the victims of Trump's disloyalty and his deranged attempt to position himself as the only person who knows the truth, have found out nothing in the 4 days since Trump began to play this ridiculous, dangerous, un-American game. We still have no idea what those things are that he supposedly knows that other people don't, nor who told them to him, and we are waiting. This was not just his usual boast, not just his usual dismissal of this country's intelligence services, not just his usual lie about the intelligence community and the Iraq weapons of mass destruction, which was not failed intelligence, but rather intelligence manipulated and altered and falsified and turned on its head by the Bush administration. This was a man not 3 weeks before taking power, insisting this country should not investigate what the Russian dictator did to our election. A man demanding that the rest of us, from John McCain to me, need to get on with our lives. A man suggesting, again, he also said this in July, that the best response to computer hacking that might have altered the course of history was to stop using computers and to go back to using messengers. This is a man on the eve of ultimate power in our country, still insisting Russia is right and America is wrong, and he knows, quote, a lot about hacking, and he knows things that other people don't know, and you'll find out on Tuesday or Wednesday. Trump's silence through Tuesday and now Wednesday and now based on this tweet, presumably through Friday, leaves him very few ways out of this ludicrous boasting, unless by Friday you have forgotten about all this. His incoming press secretary, Sean Spicer, already so far in over his head he needs a scuba suit, flailed around the other day trying to walk back Trump's boast and to suggest the tin pot tyrant-elect was really talking about conclusions he had reached from classified briefings. This excuse might have worked if Trump had not spent so much time explaining he does not attend, need, nor worry about classified briefings. You'll find out on Tuesday or Wednesday. Well, we have not. And of course, even if we had found out, even if we yet do find out, Trump will still have painted himself into an impossible corner, just a different impossible corner. About the hacking, quote, I know things that other people don't know. Who told them to you, Trump? If it's from American intelligence briefers, you said you don't believe them. If it's from American intelligence briefers, why are you revealing or merely referencing secret classified information weeks before you're legally permitted to do so? If it's not from American intelligence briefers, who was it from? Was it Vladimir Putin? Did he tell you Russia didn't hack the DNC and try to swing the election so it would have you in office? How long did Putin know? How long has it been since he told you? Did he tell you this before the election, Trump? Why have you not told America? Why did you not tell America even just last Saturday night or Tuesday instead of another tweet worthy of a snot-nosed teenage boy? Did Putin tell you not to tell us? Why did you agree to conspire with Putin to conceal this information, even if it has only been concealed since last Saturday? Did you inform American intelligence of what Putin told you? And if so, how quickly did you do that, Trump? What are the things you know that other people don't, Trump, were not told to you by American intelligence nor by Putin? Who then? How do they know? Who told them? Why have you not told America what they knew? Is your hacking source General Michael Flynn, who reads and believes and disseminates conspiracy theories, bluntly, insane conspiracy theories about pedophilia and Sharia law and Democrats ritually drinking body fluids? Is your hacking source Julian Assange, who for Speaker of the House Ryan steals and is a, quote, sycophant for Russia and has long since lost any credibility among conservatives or liberals? Is your hacking source Trump Alex Jones, the radio nut, who believes Sandy Hook never happened and the dead bodies there were child actors? Is your hacking source the National Enquirer, who you parroted when it claimed Ted Cruz's father was involved in the Kennedy assassination? Is your hacking source the individual you have repeatedly cited as a computer expert, your 10-year-old son? Or your hacking source and the things you know that other people don't know, and the part about Tuesday or Wednesday, and the part of a delayed briefing that was reportedly never scheduled in the first place, did you just make them up because you thought we were all too stupid to expect you to deliver? In the summer, Trump insisted the election was rigged. In the autumn, the intelligence community revealed conclusions that maybe he was right. In the winter, Trump suggests we should not hold hearings to see if the Russians subverted our freedoms by remote control. In a tux on New Year's Eve, Trump insists about the hacking that I know things that other people don't know and you'll find out on Tuesday or Wednesday. In a peevish tweet on Tuesday night, he throws up another accusatory smokescreen by writing, perhaps more time needed to build a case, very strange. And in his most disturbing tweet yet on Wednesday morning, he defended a man facing a sexual assault charge in Sweden and probable espionage charges here, and he attacked the men and women who defend us. So now, we need to have not just hearings about the hacking. We need hearings about what Trump meant last Saturday night, what he knew, why he promised to reveal it, and why he is concealing it now. In short, to revise a great question from history, what did Donald Trump know, and when did he stop knowing it? Resist.
All right. Peace. Thank you, Keith. Peace. All righty. That's Keith Overman, as always. Interesting. Very, very interesting. All right. I have something that's been thrown across my desk. It's black kids attend school on how to deal with the police. There has been so much in Chicago where the police, they're not being police officers. They are afraid to do their jobs. Maybe that's the reason why we have these high-ass crime statistics in this city. A lot of the police themselves are saying that they're not doing their jobs. In some kind, maybe they're afraid of the criminals. Maybe they're afraid of going in some of these neighborhoods, going out and getting shot. But I've said this before: if you don't want to do your job, you're a police officer, and you don't want to do your job, you're afraid to do your job, you're hesitant about doing what you should be doing, stopping, you know, checking suspicious people out. There's nothing wrong with that, but I understand you guys have a lot of paperwork to do every time you stop somebody. Well, that's your job. You're getting paid a lot of money to do that. And I want to say this: if you can't do your job, quit. If you don't like being a police officer, if you can't do it, if there's something wrong with it, quit. There's nobody holding you to the job. Quit. If you're afraid to go in some of these high crime neighborhoods where the bad guys are, resign and let the city, the mayor, hire police officers who will be police officers. What I mean is to serve and protect. I mean, you got black kids attending schools to learn how to deal with the police. Maybe the police should be attending schools to learn how to deal with African Americans. You know, I think maybe that's warranted, or, you know, or both. Who knows? But we have to come to some kind of consensus on the crime in the city of Chicago. It's pathetic. I mean, I know there's crime happening other places in other cities and other corners of the world. I know that, but Chicago is on the national map. And that's ridiculous. You're almost afraid to say that you are from Chicago. Where do you live? Oh, I don't know. I live in Montana. You're almost afraid to say that you live here. And I've heard some people say that they're afraid to live in the city of Chicago. And I've heard African Americans say that they wish they were not black. They are embarrassed to be black. I've heard people say that, you know. So we really have got to get a handle on crime in the city of Chicago. And not just Chicago, but other places too, you know. But I'm focusing on Chicago right now because Chicago has had 762 murders in 2016, following 4,331 shootings together. And that's pathetic. And even the police department in the city of Chicago admitted that they had not done a good job. They admitted it. Not doing a good job. While all of that, blaming parents, blaming the judicial system, and all not doing their jobs. You know, and that's pathetic. You know, I mean, these people get paid good money to not do their jobs, and the mayor's backing them. This is why I said we got to vote these people out. If you don't want to do your job, you can't stand it, you're scared, you don't want to do it, you're not doing it, stop collecting your paycheck and quit. I mean, when you are a police officer, you take an oath to serve and protect. If you can't do that, then, you know, give up your badge, period. because we in the city of Chicago, we want to feel as if we're protected, that we can walk down the damn street without getting mugged and shot. You know, that's what it's all about. And I knew from the get-go, from the start, that the police were not doing an effective enough job to bring down the crime in the city of Chicago. I've said this several times. Los Angeles, New York, Chicago is the third largest city. New York is the first largest. Los Angeles is the second largest. Chicago is the third largest. New York, Los Angeles combined have a lower crime rate than the city of Chicago. There's always been that argument that the reason why New York and Los Angeles have a low crime statistics because they're harder on guns. They're harder on guns. Folks, there is no other city in the world that's more tight on guns than the city of Chicago. And so that's I always felt that was a non-starter for an argument, but they use it anyway. They use it anyway. They get a couple of stupid people to believe it, but level-headed people who know what's going on, they know better into believing garbage like that, especially when it's your child or your friend or your neighbor getting gunned down night after night, weekend after weekend. And these people are getting big paychecks to do the job of a police officer, yet they're not doing it. I mean, there have been some police officers in the city of Chicago, they have been interviewed and they will tell you straight up that they're not as proactive on the streets as they should be. Proactive, they're not as proactive, coming from their own mouths. So we have to do something in the city of Chicago. Vote out these assholes who are just mouthpieces. They just talk, a lot of talk. And I've said this before. If you want to end the violence in the city of Chicago, you have to make it the first priority. It has to be top priority. It cannot be put on the back burner. I mean, the crime situation, the killing, the shootings in Chicago, it has to be dealt with. Everything else is non-existent or cannot be acted upon. We got to get rid of, we got to figure out a way to lower the crime in the city of Chicago. And I think it's going to take all of us. I think it's going to take all of us. Not just the police officers, but all of us. But the police officers cannot deny that they do not have a stake in this. They have a stake in this. And I've said this a million times. In these high crime areas, what you have to do is have a police presence that is 24/7 around the clock. Do not leave these high crime areas. If police officers are afraid to go into these high crime areas and do round the clock patrols or just be stationary in some of these crime-ridden neighborhoods, they should quit and hire those officers, those people who are willing to do the job, who are dedicated to being a police officer, who are dedicated into helping people, protecting people. If you're out there and you're applying for a job as a police officer just to get a paycheck, you shouldn't be a police officer. You have to be dedicated. You have to want to do the job. You have to want to help people out. If you're just wanting to get a police officer position because it pays good, you'll be able to buy a house and a car, then do not become a police officer. Simple as that. Simple as that. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook, Block Talk Radio. I'm all over the place. Google, Instagram. We're on Instagram. Okay. All right. author Jim Cosby. Thanks for being on the show. We're going to do this right quick, and we will be right back.
Donald Trump is a con man. That is basically the easiest way to describe Donald Trump, the human being. And a lot of people knew this. We knew as soon as he announced his run for president, every horrible con he'd pulled off on the American public in the past. Trump University, Trump Steaks, how he screwed over all his workers. The man did everything possible to make a few extra dollars at the expense of everyone else, regardless of the fact that he was delivering shoddy products and lies. So we knew that. A lot of the American public knew it. A lot of Trump supporters understood that fact. But they still voted for him. And the question is, why did so many Americans fall for this Donald Trump con? Think about this. I know we've talked about the racism and the sexism, and yes, that played a huge role. Hillary Clinton's lack of talking about the issues played a role in people going to Trump. But why were they so desperate that they would fall for such obvious lies? We have a real problem in the United States, not as intense as the racism and the sexism, but there is a psychological problem with people in the United States. And that problem is that we're always trying to find the hero. We have a very severe and almost borderline disgusting case of hero worship in the United States. We're desperate to find anyone who says something that could indicate that they might do something that could possibly help our current situation. And Donald Trump understood that. That is one of the first traits of a con man, is psychological manipulation. And that's what he did with a lot of this country. He promised them these great things that they didn't even know that they wanted, like a wall between U.S. and Mexico. Because he found out that people who are unhappy about their situation are desperate for somebody to blame and desperate for somebody to come along and say that they're going to fix it. Hero worship and blame. And that's what we're looking at right now with the American psyche. You know, maybe the Midwesterner whose job got cut because his company moved overseas, maybe Trump convinced him that if we build that wall between us and Mexico, your job's coming back. It's the Mexicans that stole your job. Has nothing to do with the fact that your industry simply went out of business due to a lack of demand, due to basic economics. No. It's somebody else's to blame. Put your faith in me and I'll make it better. And that's what happened. Because Americans wanted that hero, that, you know, unsung outsider establishment, political vigilante to swoop in and save the day. And they were desperate for it. That's why a lot of Republicans go back and look at Ronald Reagan and say, what a great man. He was amazing. He was awesome. It's false hero worship. Reagan was terrible. There is no way to say that Reagan was a good president. He killed unions, Iran-Contra. I mean, good God, the economy went into recessions constantly during his tenure. But Republicans don't see that. They see him as just this average guy who came in and golly gee, he did a great job. He's a hero. No, he's not. He is not. Just like Donald Trump is not. And we've seen it. Because once a con man gets what they want, the con is over and they can do whatever they want. And that's what happened with Donald Trump. The second the election was over, all those promises to drain the swamp, well, it turns out he's picking the worst people from that swamp to run his administration. And suddenly the public, Trump voters, not the whole public, only the people dumb enough to vote for Donald Trump, are like, oh my God, I've made a huge mistake. And you did. You were conned because you were desperate. And that's not necessarily your fault. And this is where the Democrats need to come in and explain what that party stands for. If they were to actually go out there and talk to these people who were desperate for a hero, these people would understand that the Democratic Party does represent them. They are fighting for them, or at least they used to. Today, it's almost hard to distinguish between a Democrat and Republican.
You got
but
that
four
right.
4 years ago, 8 years ago, if we would have done that, we would have beat Donald Trump before he even entered the race. He probably wouldn't have entered the race. People are desperate for somebody to come along and make their lives a little better. They want that hero. The Democratic Party.
They thought it was Obama.
Have been that
in
hero.
2008. They thought
instead,
it was Obama.
They let con man Trump come in and fool millions of voters whose lives are going to be much, much worse in the next 4 years because the Democratic Party didn't do anything to prevent it.
I totally agree. The Democrats, you can't really tell them apart nowadays. You got some Democrats who are acting just like Republicans because they feel if the Republicans can get away with lies and corruption, well, hey, wow, Democrats can get away with lies and corruption too. You know, Democrats are doing what the Republicans are doing because they're feeling that the Republicans are winning with the way they are doing things. So the Democrats are going to adopt their way of doing things, and the Democrats, they still lose. I mean, you've got some Republicans who are only who are calling themselves Democrats. Totally. You got because a lot of the Republicans run as Democrats because they don't feel if they run as a Republican, they're not going to win. So they run as a Democrat. And then once they win as a Democrat, their conservatism start emerging. So that's very true. And I do agree with that. Democrats are not Democrats anymore. They are pretending to be Democrats to get in office because they know that a lot of people, you know, a lot of grassroots Democrats, you know, they're not in favor of Republicans. And as I've said before, a lot of the Republicans who are in office now and have been in office for, you know, the last 10 years, they're there because simply people did not vote. They did not vote. I mean, you can't really blame Donald Trump because Obama voters who voted for Obama twice, 2008 and 2012, they decided they weren't going to go for him again. They weren't going to give Hillary a third term because they didn't see their condition getting better. It hadn't gotten any better. They voted for Obama in 2008. They voted for him in 2012. You know, that's 8 years, and they're still in the same rut that they were back in 2008. And he's leaving office now. So they said, well, and in some cases, they are worse off than ever. And Obama knows this. And there's no doubt about it. It was African Americans who put Obama in office. And they said, no, 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 not this time. We've gone with you twice. And Trump was out there promising the world. He was promising the world. And a lot of African-Americans turned against Obama. You know, they started calling him names. They turned against him. They were pissed off at him because they didn't see their lives getting any better under his presidency. And I have to agree. It didn't. Their lives did not get better. Even he agrees with that. 8 years. And a few weeks ago, he was saying he needed four more. And people were saying, are you crazy? Four more years? You want to do 12 years? You know, he was counting on Hillary. But people were just so pissed off at Obama for not being the president that they wanted him to be, for not being the Messiah. For not being the kind of guy that he espouses in his speeches. I mean, he gives a great speech. I'm thinking the guy's going to be the next Martin Luther King. I mean, when I voted for Obama the first time in 2008, I thought we had a second coming. I thought this guy was going to turn politics on its ass. That never happened. It never happened. And now he's leaving office and everybody's giving him a high five. I think Obama's popularity is at an all-time high as he leaves office. I think the American people compares him to Donald Trump. And the majority of those people, over 3 million of them, did not vote for Donald Trump. And they saw Donald Trump's press conference and they compared all of this to Donald Trump, and they felt like standing next to Donald Trump, Obama looks like he's, you know, what he is, a scholar. He's smart. He's intelligent. He's bright. You know, he has a big vocabulary. Donald Trump has none. If it sounds like Donald Trump has a vocabulary, that's because he's reading a teleprompter. But I think, and that's what I think. I think Americans are comparing Donald Trump comparing Barack Obama to Donald Trump, and Barack Obama comes out on top. And I think that's why his ratings are so high, even though he's been a disappointment to some African Americans and some Hispanics. People are still there. Okay, you talk about, you saying that the economy is doing well. It may be for some people, but in the African American community, unemployment is at an all-time high for Black Americans. I mean, nationally, it's great, but you break it down and you analyze it, and you will find that, you know, in the African American community, unemployment is swelling out at the seams. It's very high. And in a lot of these communities, they rushed out to vote for Obama in 2008 and 2012. Because he seems as though he was promising something for them. He's going to give them something for their vote. And he gave them nothing. And this is why they turned against him and voted for Donald Trump. And they will tell you that. They proudly voted for Donald Trump. They didn't try to hide it. Because Donald Trump came from nowhere. To them, Donald Trump came from nowhere and promised them the world. Donald Trump stood up there in one of his rallies. Donald Trump stood up there at one of his rallies, if I can say that again. And he looked at Black people. He looked straight into the television and said, "Hey, Black people, that's Donald Trump. Obama hasn't done anything for you. I'm going to give you everything. I'm going to get you a job. I'm going to do this. Obama hasn't done anything." Trump was not the only one who said that. I mean, Tavis Smiley, other Black leaders like Cornel West, these kinds of people, Jesse Jackson, have said the same thing, that Obama has really not done much for the African-American community for 8 years. It's just not me saying that. It's a lot of African-American leaders. But then you got people who just look over his not doing much for the African-American people, and they still love him. They still give him high marks. Even himself, Obama himself says he can't. He didn't do what he could have done, despite all the obstruction in Congress. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. You know, if I can change the subject right quick, I just have to say this, because I was and still is a big Michael Jackson fan. My son is a Michael Jackson fan. And there is some sort of movie out right now. A white guy is playing Michael Jackson. And it's a lot of flack on Twitter about this. A lot of people are upset at this. And a lot of people are saying, a white guy playing Michael Jackson? This is ridiculous. It is ridiculous. It makes you want to vomit. Because Michael Jackson, I think in his last days, or someone asked him at an interview, who would he like to play him in a movie? And one of the, I think the interviewer said, would you like a white person to play you in a movie? Because, you know, Michael Jackson in Last Days, he looked like he was white. And then Michael Jackson said, that's stupid. That's ridiculous. I don't want a white guy playing me. Michael Jackson said this himself. And yet Hollywood went out and got a white guy to play Michael Jackson in a movie. And a lot of the people on Twitter are saying, I hope the movie fails. I know damn well I'm not going to see it. I mean, Michael Jackson was black through and through. He was African-American through and through, no matter what he had done with his face. He was, and this guy, I mean, he doesn't even look like Michael Jackson in Michael Jackson's later years. He doesn't even look like Michael Jackson. He looks ridiculous. Actually, Michael Jackson looked better than that. This white guy, Joseph Fiennes or something, whatever the hell his last name is, he's a white man playing Michael Jackson. He's playing Michael Jackson in his last days. And Michael Jackson said years before that he didn't want a white guy playing him, but yet Hollywood has gotten a white guy to play him. And a lot of us are saying, do not go see that movie. Boycott that movie, because that's ridiculous. All right, I just had to get that off my chest, folks. A white person playing. I mean, that's like, you know, I mean, that's crazy. You know, it's just, it kind of makes you upset, kind of. You know, I'm not racist. I'm not a bigot. I'm not a hater. But you think of Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson was an African-American. And, you know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. It does make you want to vomit. All right. Robert De Niro says enough is enough in a letter supporting Streep. I mean, I think when Trump attacked Meryl Streep, the actress, I think he actually did himself a disfavor, because Hollywood cannot stand him. They do not like him. They don't want him. You know, I mean, he attacked Meryl Streep. I talked about this on the show yesterday. And for him to do that, he's sick. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me right here. I'm going into my third year on the show. It will be coming up in August 2017. Seems as though I've actually gotten used to saying 2017. That's good, because I've been writing down 2016 for so long that you have to get in you have to get in some kind of a rhythm write 2017, because it's a new year. And like I've said before, I hope you guys have had a great holiday, Christmas, New Year's, all that good stuff, and be kind to one another, be nice to one another. Find your happy place and be free. But we are in trouble with Trump. I mean, we are in trouble. If this guy doesn't, start being presidential and sensible, we're going to be in a lot of trouble. Today, he attacked the press. Today, he attacked CNN. I mean, he told a reporter that he wasn't going to take their questions, that his organization was fake news. I mean, this guy is something else. We are in trouble, and we're just going to have to see where we're going to go from here. And like I said yesterday, I don't want to see Donald Trump fail. I want to see him succeed. I want to see him succeed. Because if he succeeds, America succeeds. And a lot of us are saying that Donald Trump will not last 4 years as president. If Donald Trump keeps going the way that he's going now, he will not last a year as president or 2 years as president. Because I do think, and I really do think, that if some of the Republicans in Congress, they'd rather see the Republican Mike Pence the vice president of the United States, Mike Pence, they would rather see him take office, you know, be president than Trump. Because I'm not a fan of Mike Pence, but he does look to me to be a little bit more presidential than Trump.
Bombs begin to fall. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has to crawl.
Someone just said 90 seconds. Thanks for joining me today on the show. It's been fun. I want to thank my guest, Jim Cosby. He talked about the music business, and that's one of my favorite subjects is music, especially when it's not politics. Politics can be sickening, but I want to thank him for dropping by. He was a great guest, and I hope you guys join me tomorrow, and we will talk more politics and whatever we... All right, bye-bye, everybody. Join me tomorrow. Bye.